the own mu- my own music that I listen to. But there was one, and there was a motorcycle gang in there, was it not? I was just curious, how did that like come together?
So I was a member of a motorcycle club, and those were my brothers, and you know, I love riding. I love riding in community with my comrades, and that was at a time in my life where I was deep into the lifestyle, and it occurred to me, and you'll see this repeated in a lot of my other videos, we live in one of the most beautiful parts of the country, you know, and while other people are always trying to shoot videos inside of, you know, nightclubs and throwing around money and stuff, I was like, you know, just look outdoors. We, you know, I'm not going to try to outdo you with cars and stuff, but I'm going to show you how beautiful the area you live in is. And so I, riding with like 30, 40 people in formation is like, it's something else, you know? So I was like, let me share this with the world. So that's what we did. It was fun shooting it. We didn't have a big production team. We had basically one camera guy, and we got a car and another guy to drive, an assistant camera guy to drive. So those guys would either be driving behind us, alongside of us, or in front of us, and one person would be hanging out the window with the camera.
Amazing.
Yes.
That dedication.
Yeah, we need that. That's how we get it done.
The way you're talking about how you form your lyrics and your rhymes, how does that go for your poetry? Like, is it maybe the same?
Yeah, so there's an innate sense of rhythm that we have, because we breathe, right, and our heart beats. And so there's this involuntary rhythm that drives a lot of our life if we just pay attention to it. When I was a kid, I noticed a couple of times I'd be listening to the radio and somebody else would be on the telephone. And then without the person who was on the phone trying, I'd be like, it almost sounds like they're talking to the beat, you know? But that was one thing I noticed early on about the rhythm with which we speak. You know, we pause, we breathe. Our volume has dynamics, we go up and down. And so in about 1996, I was working at a restaurant, and I'd already been writing, but they had the National Poetry Slam Championships at the restaurant I was working at. So while I was working, I was listening to all these spoken word artists, and I heard an artist by the name of Saul Williams perform. And I was so inspired by what he did, I signed up and like joined the competition the next day. And what it was he did was with his voice, he was doing a lyrical performance that was more powerful than anything I ever heard with music. Just him talking on the microphone. And so from that point on, I've written everything that I do in a way that I want it to be able to stand alone and be just as powerful, or even sometimes more powerful than it is with musical accompaniment. So all my lyrics that are performing in music, I perform the same things without me. So you know, rap is just rhythm and poetry, literally.
And with your poetry, where do you publish that? Do you publish it online, or do you actually make print books, or how do you share that with people?
You know, I just record. I have some, there's a cappella recordings on some of the albums I've released. There's live video of it that's on YouTube, or like the Earthbound poem that I did in the Arctic actually has a whole other video that has a beat to it, has music to it. I have not published a lot of work. I'm working on two books right now. And that's been one of the more difficult undertakings in my life is working on writing a book. Because writing a book, even though I write a lot of music, making the time that it takes to consistently write enough to finish a book is a bit different of a practice for me. You know, and it's not like the music comes from inspiration. And to me, that's easy. There's a lot of inspiration. But in writing the book, there's this extra step that's really time consuming. And the only way to get it done is to be consistent. Mm-hmm. So that's been the challenge, but I'm committed. I'm hoping that once I finish my first two books, that it'll be a little bit easier to continue to write in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really hard to maintain that discipline. I have not written a book, mm-hmm. but I can understand from other types of projects that just require that daily practice of just getting up and doing it every day so that you don't procrastinate and let it slide.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk with us at all about the content of those books, or you want to stick more to
So the life, there's a podcast you all might be interested in called It Did Happen Here. I don't know if you got to check that out at all.
I sent it to him. Yeah. I've listened. It's
And we've got a book we're working on for that podcast. And then there's another book I'm working on that's just my autobiographical memoir. And so the same publishing company is releasing both books. And that's what I'm working on. The book that is my autobiographical memoir is just my experience of becoming politicized and ultimately being a founder of these organizations and this anti-racist action movement.
I wanted to ask about the podcast that you do that you mentioned. Can you tell us a bit about how it sort of came together? Like who came to who and said, "Hey, let's do this project."
I think sure. That'd be a great idea. There's a man by the name of David Gilbert who was a political prisoner. He went to jail in the 70s, I think. Late 70s or 1980 for a bank robbery. He was a getaway driver in a bank robbery. Really interesting story. They thought he was never really, a lot of us thought he would never get out of prison, but his sentence was just commuted. His son is actually the district attorney in San Francisco. So David Gilbert was a member of the Weather Underground and a supporter of the Black Liberation Army, which was a militant formation that was related to the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. He wrote a book called Love and Struggle while he was in prison. And when it was time for the book to be published, they wanted people to go on tour to promote the book. He couldn't do it because he was in prison. So I was asked if I could be one of the people that went on the book tour. While I was touring on behalf of David Gilbert's book, the publishers that I was on the book tour with, Driving City to City, got to hear my story about being a Black skinhead and the anti-racist skinhead movement. And they were like, "Hey man, you should really think about writing a book." So they informally offered me a book deal then. That was years and years ago. And I kept procrastinating and kept procrastinating. Over the last few years, I said, you know, I need to quit procrastinating and really commit to this. So I set out to capture the stories of some of the people I grew up with. And I went back to Chicago, went to Minneapolis, went to Atlanta, and I recorded the stories of a lot of the other Black skinheads, because people don't know that there were Black skinheads. They don't know the history and realize that the first skinheads were not racist at all. And that, in fact, there were a lot of Black skinheads. Some of the first skinheads were Black. And so in recording their stories for my book, I was gonna transcribe these interviews. Some colleagues that I worked with at KBOO said, "Hey, you know those stories you're recording for your book? What if we turn some of those stories into a podcast?" And connected it to the history of anti-racist organizing in Portland specifically, because there was a lot of connections between what we did in Minneapolis and what happened here in Portland in the 90s with the anti-racist action movement. So I said, sure. And so at that point, what I was working on for my book helped form the basis of the podcast that became It Did Happen. So the two projects are pretty intertwined.
That's cool. I had no idea the book was the first thing. It's just, the first piece.
It's just that we finished the podcast because it's easier to record people.
Yeah. It's a lot quicker. That's true. You two, Nicole and Ayana, you might not know this, but actually that's part of the reason that this show ended up on KBOO is that Erin Yankee was leaving, because Erin Yankee was one of the collaborators on It Did Happen Here. She's a friend of mine. And Erin was leaving KBOO for a sabbatical to work on that podcast with Mike. And then I reached out and was like, hey, I have these young people that are really smart and great, and they're curious about art, and we're making this show. And so Erin said, oh, actually, I'm leaving. There's the spot opening. Why don't you put it on the radio? And that's how we got here, which I kind of forgot about that connection too. It's like everything, if you dig a little bit in the creative community in Portland, it's like all everybody's connected in all these ways.
Big shout out to Erin, because a lot of, you know, she was the one who initially approached me and said, hey, we've got these resources, and what do you think about taking your content and combining it with this project for the podcast? But she, her skills, you know, as a sound designer, are just incredible. And, you know, it really helped her and Icky layer the atmosphere of the podcast so that it's a richer experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really, enjoyed listening to it. It's kind of a weird thing to say about that because it's pretty intense, but it's like, it's such a good listen. It's really well made. Yeah. Highly recommend anybody listening to this episode, go check out every episode of It Did Happen Here. Mm-hmm. We'll link to some stuff in the show page.
Yeah, I think it was really interesting. I only got a chance to listen to one episode, but being like a Oregon Portland native, it wasn't until like probably I want to say high schoolish that I learned that you know, we have a deep history of racism, and it wasn't until then that I started learning more and more about that. I think it's a really good listen if you aren't aware that we have that deep history here, and that it's still something that we're still like fighting to this day, and it's just not as prevalent as it was back then. Which kind of leads me to a question that I had, being that you were kind of here around like,
it's okay. You hear that? We all know it's your dog. Okay. It's fine.
Yeah. being that you kind of have a different perspective of hearing people's stories and also living through it, how would you say that times have changed from how it was back then and how it is now for some of our younger audience?
I see the repeat of a lot of things. You know, there's always been racism, in different periods. The racism in this country and other forms of oppression too intersect and become more intensified, and we're seeing another iteration of that right now. These same things were going on in the 80s, and if you study history, then it's never that they weren't going on. It's just a matter of the type of exposure that these events and the people who were responsible for racial terror and different forms of oppression. There's just been different times where that's been more in the public eye or field of awareness. Right now, the reason that, you know, white supremacy and racism and different forms of fascism are so prevalent is because there's a broader social, political, economic context at this time in history. And we're seeing that people who once enjoyed a lot of material support for their privilege, a lot of that is going away because of the socioeconomic conditions that we face. And there's a lot of insecurity that's actually the result of capitalism and actually the result of white supremacist patriarchy. But instead of facing the truth that's at the root of those issues, it's easier for people to want a scapegoat and blame somebody else for those, their vanishing entitlement that they are scared to death of, really. And in the face of that fear, they're moved to violence and hate and a lot of rhetoric to try to influence people's thinking, you know? And it's sad, it's really sad, but it's something that's just part of reality here. There are parallels to it in other parts of the world as well. So it's just, I think it's just a matter of awareness. And the more we learn, the more we can start to understand that some of the things that we're just becoming aware of are part of longer historical continuum.
Yeah, it was interesting looking at some of your work. And again, I was also talking with Erica before this, that I'm learning about like different sort of how different groups of people are oppressed and discriminated against in our culture. And in this recent discussion we had, I noticed, like, you know, a lot of times there are people with higher power who allow these people to think that it's okay to behave certain ways and to think that it's okay to, you know, like hurt each other and just do all these bad things to each other, but in reality, like, it's not. And it's because these people aren't telling, aren't holding them accountable. Or, like, there are people up with big power that are still saying, oh, it's okay, we're not gonna mention that. So it's just like, it was so interesting to see all these different parallels that I see through sort of the education that I'm getting now and like what a lot of artists are and activists as well are fighting for. And yeah, I just wanted to mention that. I don't think I got a question out of that.
Yeah, it's true though. You know, if we examine this whole debate around critical race theory and even intersect that with voting rights, which is in the news a lot, it's a lot of that is around the people in power wanting large, like mass amounts of the population to remain ignorant and emotional, you know, and to be angry and fearful of some, you know, imaginary boogeyman or enemy. And that, in this country, that always means the marginalized people, you know, indigenous people, black people, women, sexual minorities, you know, poor people, mentally ill people. Those people are always going to be the scapegoat and the target to try to distract masses of people from understanding, like, actually, no, it's these corporate interests and the politicians that serve the corporate interests to protect private property and consolidation of wealth. That's always been the people who get away with murder. And it's only the ignorance and the misinformed that buy what those people are selling them, you know, and the rhetoric. Mm-hmm. And that's what we see. And so the fight to keep masses of people uneducated is a huge weapon in keeping the thing power, because the more informed people are, then the more critically they're going to assess and analyze their daily lives and be like, actually, it's not that guy's fault. Actually, it has nothing to do with the border. Mm-hmm. It has everything to do with the laws and our ability to actually change things with the vote or not, and our desire to get in the streets and demand change, you know, because if people are in the streets demanding reactionary consciousness, which means like that backwards stuff, you know what I'm saying? Like, let's not educate people. Let's not give women the right to choose. Let's make it harder for people who are non-binary to have human rights. Like, all that is actually going backwards. And it's funny to realize that the people who want to fight to go backwards are the ones who are most willing to employ violence. You know, that should tell you something right there.
Yeah, something I appreciated that over and over again in the podcast. And it's so unfortunate to just hear that history and then also think about how similarly it played out to, you know, the last couple of years, you know, of protesting of like social upheaval that is like sort of has had a rise recently. But anyway, this idea of like the moderate or liberal sort of perspective trying to push back against that actually in the street reaction that people are having, that really justified reaction that everyone is having who's doing that more like public protesting. People who are doing things like, you know, there's a moment in the podcast where you, I think, are talking about, you know, countering hate graffiti with like counter graffiti that is, you know, anti-racist graffiti. And I think there's this thing in Portland right now, there's this real strain of people who are, you know, the graffiti abatement kind of idea, or the like, you know, beautification idea, and the idea that like everything has to always be nice.
But everything isn't always nice. If you go to the streets and look at how many people have been thrust out of the economy and onto the sidewalk, you know, and that's violence. You see, when we have this conversation about violence, everybody wants to protect the system that uses violence as a tool to control the populace, to control people socially, economically, and politically. But instead of being critical of that, they want to be critical of the people who are in the street spray painting things, breaking windows. That's damage to property. But the reason they're in the streets is because you guys are actually killing human beings. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. There's a difference. There's a huge difference between breaking a window or spray painting on something and getting away with murder time and time again. And what do you think that the cumulative impact of that trauma is on the people who are targeted? You know, so you don't, it's asymmetrical in the conversation. You know, the media does a lot of work, not community media, right? But corporate media does a lot of work to never ask the important questions. You know, they're almost encouraged. Well, they do. They actively encourage limited thinking and ignorance. And because that's where most people get their information from, we got people acting and thinking as if they're informed, but they're not. They're being misled.
Absolutely.
I actually have to go back to my deadline work.
Okay. Can we sneak in one last quick question from you?
Yes.
What advice would you have for any youth aspiring to just be either politically active or become a musician, just kind of a general scope of what you've experienced? What advice do you have?
So with being politically active, go deep. Always look for the root cause. That's what the term radical means. Because in order to eradicate, you have to go down to the root. You can't just pull off the leaf or, you know, the twig of the weed that you want to eradicate. So in terms of political consciousness, go deep and always look for the root cause. And then in terms of creative aspiration, go as high as you can go. Set your, you know, set your sights for the wildest dream you can possibly imagine, and then work for that, even if it takes you the rest of your life. Yeah.
Before we sort of click off, do you have anything that you would like to plug? Any future projects where we can find your work? And et cetera.
So I'm on all the socials, you know, Twitter. I'm not on Twitter as much, but Instagram at Mike Crenshaw, MICCRENSHAW. Definitely go to the It Did Happen Here podcast, itdidhappenherepodcast.com, and check that out and share it with people. Stay tuned for album I'm coming out with called Power to the Public. That's a collaboration with David Rovics and Adam Carpinelli, Michael Galen, and some other musicians. Our first single is gonna be called Free 'Em All. And that's gonna have a video, and it's about, you know, the fight to free political prisoners, featuring Opium Sabah. And then the Rebel Wise Project is on all platforms. So many good videos and such good music. Big shout out to Quincy Davis, my creative collaborator on Rebel Wise. And last saw my recent release that hasn't had a lot of publicity, but you should check it out, is a rock collaboration with the Jai Marshall called Black Skinhead, and that's on Emergency Hearts Records. And we have Born to Fight was the first single out of that, so if you go to YouTube and look for Mike Crenshaw Born to Fight, you'll see that video. And then we've got a good one, a video going to be released in March from that album as well. So thanks for asking and thanks for having me. It was great talking to you guys.
Thank you, Mike. Really appreciate it. It's been so great to talk to you.
Bye, Erica. Bye, Anna. Bye, Nicole.
Bye.
Bye.
What's the trauma doing in my head? Homicide, hunt me down and gun me down. Every time I go outside, choke the man to death in the light day. Shot that boy in his head and let his body lay. They afraid of me and I'm afraid to live. Aimlessly, courage, faith, and bravery. Let's evade slavery. Hunt you down, gun you down, choking on your blood to drown. Maybe they will learn when the tables turn. Block the arteries and let the city burn. I have no choice, I have no voice, so I'm taking out the lights. You won't see me coming under cover of the night. They say they felt threatened and it justifies murder. They get it, quit it, I don't forget it. In the streets, I'm Turner. They insincere and insecure and immature, nervous. Some of us try to organize, we're gonna die, it's certain. We make them rich and over fist the products that we purchase. The food we eat, the thoughts we think. We drink, it hurts us. All our lives we pay the price and gone against the current. The systems we can face defeat, but that's beneath the surface. Eye for eye, tooth for tooth, the whole world's blind and toothless. I want justice and I think there should be retribution. The police are a lynch mob, public executions. They operate above the law, brutal and abusive. Someone reform, what do we want? We want revolution. Freedom and democracy, you suffer that illusion. There will be blood, there will be death, there will be less confusion. Now there's violence daily and apparently we're losing. Riot is a language of the young. Lying in the flames and the thunder, tying in the chains that I'm under, suffering the pain and the hunger. Riot is the language of the younger. Lying in the flames and the thunder, tying in the chains that I'm under, suffering the pain and the hunger. Hush me with capital, try me. Trap is my radical methods are tactical, highly. Talking about clapping, you do them like the Kennedys. Another black man trapping, you know that is not my enemy. Riot is the language of the younger. Lighting in the flames and the thunder. Tighten in the chains that I'm under. Suffering the pain and the hunger. Riot is the language of the younger. Lighting in the flames and the thunder. Tighten in the chains that I'm under. Suffering the pain. Imminent threat, infinite death, struggle. Never forget the blood that was shed so long. I never respect the system of stress, struggle. Victimization, prison and debt. Prolonged, put my life on the line. Running out of time. They kill us, we take revenge, we kill them. Then they come for our family and friends. Once the cycle begins, it will never end. Until our sides quit the game and no one wins. No one wins, no one wins, no one wins.
Kaplan. Coming up next is Jazz Lives, right after these news headlines.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy martes 25 de enero del 2022. Pfizer y BioNTech han comenzado la inscripción para un ensayo clínico para probar la seguridad y la respuesta inmune de su vacuna COVID-19.